Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I'm joined by my buddy Peter Christensen. You might know him better as Draft Cheat. And Peter had a pretty cool idea for a show, which is basically he's kind of coming at the NFL season, at the fantasy football season from the outside, right? So he's been grinding baseball really hard, doing a lot of baseball DFS, season-long betting, all of that. And of course, you know, we have been in the weeds with the NFL, with best ball drafts, with high-stakes drafts for months now. And so kind of the idea for the show was just Peter and I kind of go through the season from a really high level and do sort of a fantasy football preview, a draft guide, where Peter is coming at things from the outside, you know, asking questions, kind of trying to nail down his strategy. I think it's a pretty fun and entertaining show about the 2020 NFL season. I think that you guys will enjoy it. If you want to support the show, you can get bonus episodes on patreon.com/takecast. You can also always support the show by leaving a rating and review on iTunes. That is very useful. That is very helpful. And now let's go ahead and get into the show. All right, everyone, welcoming in Peter Christensen, Draft Cheat, to the show. Pete messaged me last week and had this idea for a show, which I thought sounded hilarious, which is basically we're going to, for the next hour, we're just going to get Pete ready for football in 2020. I think he's listened to like a total of 2.5 fantasy football podcasts. So we are going to answer the questions that Peter has about professional football in 2020.
Yeah, this will be good. A learning experience for me. I've been certainly behind on the football research. Just obviously launching a new baseball site, and I've been really involved in that. And I don't know, the football, like we talked about pre-show, just kind of caught up on me. And I think maybe a lot of people are in the same boat. So yeah, I have listened to a few podcasts. I heard you on my good friend, the Podfather Show, listened to some Silva and Levitan, heard you do that, that live FFPC draft. So caught up a little bit. I know some of your takes, but certainly excited to hear more.
So let's just start off right here. Looking at ADP, coming in very cold, like, what was the one thing that you were like, what the shit? Like, who is this guy? Or like, what, this makes no sense to me at all. What was the first thing that you were like, this just seems insane?
The biggest thing when I first got started, so I've only done one draft so far, which was my home league auction last Friday. So really, I kind of started researching like the day before that is when I started really looking at anything. Obviously, you see some stuff on Twitter. If you're on Twitter as much as we are, you're going to notice some stuff. But like all the rookies, right? Like the rookie running backs, yeah, the rookie wide receivers, like I don't even know who these guys are. I don't really follow college football either. So it's like, all right, I got to start digging in on all these guys and their athletic profiles and what role they're going to have. So that was kind of the biggest challenge. Obviously you have, you know, a decent idea of the returning players, what their skills and roles might be. But yeah, it's been tough. Man, one thing that I noticed right away that I think I'm sure you're going to agree with, the Dallas Cowboys offense just looks totally insane to me. Is that, do you share that take?
Yeah. I mean, they led the NFL in yards per play, right, last year. They were more efficient per play than the Chiefs. Right. And that's even the Chiefs with Mahomes in, they were still more efficient than that. And really their biggest problem on the whole roster was the head coach, you know, not wanting to go for it on fourth downs, just playing really conservatively. And they kept the same offensive coordinator, right? So they kept Kellen Moore, the guy actually calling the plays. And then, you know, supposedly Mike McCarthy has done this renaissance where he, like, you know, went to a Buddhist temple except for like learning to go for it on fourth down and figuring out analytics. So like, I think, yeah, I mean, I think across the board, like there is even this sentiment that like Zeke is going to be one of the bad picks in the first round, that Zeke is like a little bit trappy. And I actually think that in kind of a fair world, Zeke would be the second pick behind McCaffrey. I think that Cooper should be like the wide receiver 6. I think Gallup should be like the wide receiver 20. I think a great example is Rager is just going over Lamb. And I actually think that with how much I project Dallas to throw, even if Rager ends up being the wide receiver 1 for the Eagles, which he probably won't because of this injury, I actually think Lamb probably still outscores him.
Yeah, Lamb, you think Lamb's super legit just as a player?
Yeah, I mean, so it's kind of hard to tell with Oklahoma wide receivers because they're literally never covered. Like, you watch the games and Oklahoma wide receivers are just wide open all game. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I think Lamb is just mega legit. Like, I think Lamb is probably better than Gallup. and this will be the 1 year of their careers where Gallup scores more fantasy points than Lamb when they're both teammates, and then I think that'll switch starting in 2021.
I mean, Gallup seems super talented to me as well. Obviously, Amari Cooper, you know, people like to rag on him some, but he's a legit number one. It's like they have three receivers who I think are all could be, you know, potential number ones on their team in the NFL. Then you throw in Dak, who keeps getting better and better, another guy that I don't think people give enough credit to in general. Good offensive play calling, new head coach. Obviously, Zeke, you know, maybe not the most efficient guy, but he's still a legit back for sure. Jarwin looks good to me as a late round tight end pick. So, I mean, obviously from a fantasy perspective, I like these guys, but just from a real life football perspective, man, this offense seems like it could just
they should be
explode.
The NFC favorite, I think, yeah. And they're not. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been, when I kind of ramp up these drafts, I'll be trying to get as many Cowboys.
Yeah, that is, that definitely is kind of like a semi-popular opinion. Obviously, right. It's not like the prevailing opinion. Otherwise, all these guys. This is actually something I wanted to make this tweet yesterday, but I was having too much fun dunking on people. But like, there were people who wanted to take the contrarian like stance. There are always these people on Twitter, by the way, right. Which is just the worst hellscape of life, but there are always these people being like, all these touts are dunking on Leonard Fournette. Everyone agreed. Well, guess what? No, that's not the way it works, because it can't work that way for Leonard Fournette to still have a third round ADP. Like, for that to happen, he would have to be auto drafted in every single draft on every single website for a month, right? And that's not what happened. There were people out there that were like, Leonard Fournette, the guaranteed touches, like, it's not a thing. Like, some people were right and some people were wrong. And so just don't be the guy that's like, the touts are taking their victory laps, especially when they are right. And they were clearly right.
Yeah, people really don't like your touts, or they like to mock us, I guess, online, but yet still they are there on Twitter following us and interacting. So it's all good. But you're right. I mean, even with the Fournette thing, like, I didn't really come into this year with a real like predisposition on where I was going to stand on him. And I listened to you and Evan go on Fantasy Mansions pod, and you both argued with him for like half an hour to start the pod on Leonard Fournette. And I was just like hearing you guys' arguments, and you know, they were pretty similar, you and Evans were. And I was just like, yeah, this like would make no sense. Why would you draft this guy? You know, there's like seven reasons why he wasn't going to get the volume, perhaps get the volume that, that others were projecting, and like, all of the reasons made perfect sense, and they all just kind of pointed in one direction. When everything points in one direction, that's kind of like how I feel it is like with the Dallas offense, where it's like,
yeah,
you don't maybe want to go with the crowd and maybe you want to have a unique take, but you can't just ignore the evidence in front of you, right? If everything's pointing one way, there's no reason to just like try to fight against it just for the sake of fighting against it and trying to be different. Like, there's plenty of other places you can disagree with people, and you know, you got to follow your own process. And so, yeah, certainly a fun little morning on Twitter. There's been a few of those throughout the pandemic where it's like, you know, I love it when all of Twitter kind of comes together in one big party with the, like, you know,
when there's a main story on Twitter, generally, yeah. That's a good day.
It's a good time for sure.
Yeah. So that was, and by the way, you know, I think there are other guys like that where like when they fail, people will be like, well, everyone expected that guy to fail. But it's not true, and that's like Melvin Gordon for your hometown, Denver Broncos, Le'Veon Bell for the New York Jets. Like, find me someone out there who's like, Le'Veon Bell, got to snap him up at a discount. Like, literally no one's saying that, but Le'Veon Bell still goes in the fourth and fifth round, especially in these, you know, these high-stakes leagues in the FFPC and the NFC. Le'Veon Bell goes really high, goes, you know, for example, like Le'Veon Bell will go ahead of both of the Seattle wide receivers or Cortland Sutton. Sometimes he goes ahead of Zach Ertz and stuff like that. But yet, when Le'Veon Bell finishes the year, RB26, 3.2 yards per carry and like four touchdowns, and everyone's like, yeah, Le'Veon Bell sucked and everyone knew it, there's still going to be a group of people that are like, well, everyone agreed. But like, I mean, I probably drafted 500 teams and haven't taken Le'Veon Bell once.
Yeah.
I want my credit for that.
Not once, huh? That's pretty good. Yeah, I was going to ask you, where do you stand on how many teams are you? I assume you're diving deep into best ball. What is there? Underdog? And does every site have it now? DraftKings, I know, has it too. I haven't done any myself. But and then I know you did that $1,900 FFPC main event with the guys.
Yeah.
So, yeah, how many leagues are you in? Are you drafting, like, every night in real leagues and in best ball? What's kind of your process been like?
I mean, I'm basically drafting in best ball all the time.
Like all day long.
Yeah. Just like if you're talking like I have one pulled up right now. Yeah, like I just right. I'm just in them all the time. I do there's a site called Drafters, which actually like before Underdog launched, before DK launched their product, they were the first website this offseason to do a championship. Their first one filled. They started another one that is not quite filled yet, probably has 1,000 spots left. So I'm drafting in that one. I'm mixing the $5 and the $25 on Underdog. I can't enter in Missouri, so I have to text my buddy who lives in Kansas to enter them for me because Underdog has not paid their licensing fee in Missouri yet. So I'm drafting those, but probably only like two a day. I'm maxed out on DraftKings already because their stuff is 20 max. And the FanDuel is just the most classic FanDuel thing ever. They launched this best ball product. They have this commercial. Have you seen the commercial with Jeff Fisher yet?
I don't think so. So they bought Draft, and then shut it down.
And they shut it down.
Why did they just want their like email list or something? Like why did they buy it and then shut it down?
You know, I mean, just trying to figure out FanDuel's business strategy. Yeah. you know, you never really know exactly, but. Underdog launched it really it's we had Nick Rudman, who's the director of marketing for them, come on and was basically like, yeah, we got this ready to go in like 2 months, like, and it's very similar. And then I've done four of the 350s on, so which is the Football Guys Players Championship on FFPC. I did the Silver Bullet with Leone, which is 1K single entry on the NFC. I think there's a site called RT Sports, which is like, it's like the most boomer fantasy site ever. but I think I'm going to play a couple entries in their main event, which is $300.
I'm sure it's much softer, right?
I was looking at the ADP and I just looked at a couple draft boards and I was like, holy shit. Like these guys are so bad. So I think I'm going to do a couple teams in that. And then I also did one in the Kentucky State Fantasy Football Championship main event, which is like a main event. Like an FFPC satellite. So a lot of teams, a lot of teams out there is basically the point of that.
Fab's going to be rough, man.
Yeah. So I want to solicit advice from the people on like, do you set a dollar amount? Like, do you kind of do your values before you go in and then just kind of mass apply them to all your teams? Do you, you know, if your team is like, it's just too hard. You can't
do
right?
that. So yeah. I do a lot of,
baseball, right?
In NFBC, yeah. So I'm in three main events, a bunch of online champions. You know, I got, I think, 9 fabs to do every Sunday for that. And just with all the baseball stuff, you know, with games being canceled due to COVID.
It's been a grind, I'm sure.
And there's so much, this is just like less information, right? There's no minor league stats that you can get.
Yeah.
You know, it's a 2-month season. Like normally, you know, you need a full year to kind of realize to get away from like the small sample size problems that you can run into in baseball. So it's been, I mean, every Sunday is just hours and hours of trying to perfect the fab, and you know, there's fewer periods, so you got to be more exact. And like your question of, you know, kind of mass applying dollar bids across leagues, like it doesn't work. Like, you know,
doesn't
like
work.
I mean, some leagues you start with $1,000. I was down to, you know, $50 after 2 weeks, and in others leagues I have $800 left, you know, just based on kind of who's available and which bids go through. And so your leagues, they get so far apart from each other that each one is really kind of a, you know, just a complete grind in and of itself. So how many fab leagues will you have to do for football right now, do you think you signed up for?
So including dynasty leagues, I'm looking at like at least 25, more. Now, but a lot of those are with partners, right? So like I have some with Peter and Pat. I have some with Silva and Rich and Thorman. I have some with Leone. Like I have some, like, so it's grouped out in such a way that like I won't necessarily have to be doing all of them. Probably like solely alone, I'm the only one to be doing the bids. My guess is, and the season doesn't start for 9 more days, so the number's going to go up. But I probably at least 15 where I have to just like, I got to do the bids on these.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you have partners in some of them, but like you know, so you have a draft, a couple drafts maybe with Evan. I'm sure Evan has drafts with other partners.
Yeah.
And those people have drafts. It's like, it can almost like come full circle where it's like, there's this kind of group of you that's kind of like all sort of sharing information. And to some extent, like, I'm sure, you know, you've got teams with Evan, but I'm sure you also have some leagues
against him.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that'll be weird, because you'll be talking about how much you want to bid. If you like certain players, what are your thoughts on them? And then in the leagues where you're against him, it's like, well, I kind of know what he's going to do here, but he knows what I'm thinking as well. So that'll be an interesting dynamic, I think.
Well, they're also, this is kind of a lifesaver, where most home leagues, like leagues you do with your buddies, I mean, this is the way it is for me. Like, I have one league that I'm in with my dad, one league that I'm in with my buddies from high school, right. and then one league that I am in, like, it's basically the Roto World friends and family league, and those waivers all run on Tuesday instead of Wednesday. So at least some of those I'm able to knock out the night before, which is really nice. Like, it's nice to be able to break them up a little, which you can't do in baseball, right? But for football, at least you can kind of break it up a little bit.
Yeah, the nice thing for me is the only baseball leagues I play are the NFBC, so it's all the same format, at least. Yeah. So you kind of get used to that, because, you know, you got to kind of find a routine and what works for you. And, you know, one thing that I found is, like, you just got to get started, right? It can be so intimidating at first.
So daunting, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, I just need to, like, start stacking up the players that I want, make a list of who I need to cut from each team. So I do, like, a must-cut, could-cut, team needs, and then like who I like in general, and then you kind of go into each league and can start formulating your bid list there. So I would assume a similar approach would be something to look at in football. But yeah, I mean, you've done it for a couple of years now, so I'm sure you at least to some extent know what you're getting into, although I'm guessing this is the most football leagues you've been in ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think I did. I think I was in like 12 last year where we had to do waivers, which was like, I mean, it probably took me about an hour, right? It took me about an hour to, you know, send out all the emails to everyone, get in the group chats with everyone, and, you know, do my own and figure out what we were going to do. What actually is nice, though, is the all the high stakes leagues, there's no first come, first serve. So
no,
like,
yeah, you can't do that.
So you just don't have to feel like, oh, like I can't go to the gym for an hour. Like, I can't go do this thing for an hour, because if Nick Chubb rolls his ankle at practice, I got to pick up Dontrell Hilliard. Like, I can't even imagine how terrible that would be if there was any first come, first serve.
First come, first serve leagues are just beyond ridiculous at any reasonable stakes. You're just rewarding who's ever like the biggest loser, basically, and just like never ever leaves Twitter. Like,
I got really owned by my high school buddies literally yesterday when Leonard Fournette got cut. I got beat to Ozigbo, and I was like, this is supposed to be my thing. Like, I got beat to Ozigbo by an accountant. And that was like my life. I was like, this is literally supposed to be the one thing I can do. And I got owned.
Yeah, that's rough. Do you think he's going to be the guy, Ozigbo, over Raquel?
Well, Raquel's
already owned. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he was already owned. But Raquel didn't practice for like 3 weeks because he was on the COVID list. Then he came back and he looked okay. And now he's not with the team again. And they said he's not with the team because of an illness, but they won't say what it is. So I don't know what that's about, but it seems like it's Ozigbo. I mean, Chris Thompson is the guy you want, because Jaguars suck. The Jaguars are going to be the worst team. The Jets or the Jaguars probably are going to be the worst team in football. And they're just going to throw the ball a ton.
Yeah. They seem like they're not going to be too good. I've been surprised at the relative lack of COVID positive tests among the NFL players. I kind of thought that would be a rough start to, you know, to the teams. Like, even though they're obviously 100%. the teams aren't, you know, playing each other, which could present more problems. But I thought just when training camp started up that it was going to kind of spread like crazy, and so that's been super encouraging that hasn't happened.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of thought it was going to be a. So, like, once the baseball season started, like, the training camps went really well, but then there were that swell of positive tests right when the season first started. I thought it was going to be like that for the NFL, except for when training camps first started. And it feels not real to me. Like, it feels like someone's lying or something, because
I could see it. they're just like throwing out the positives. They're like, no, fuck it.
Well, just for that many people, for that, because this is like a large sample size. We're talking, my guess is minimum 500 people per team are being tested seriously.
How isolated are the teams from the general public?
So it seems like some teams are in hotel situations, kind of like the NBA, where like
right. They're
away from the public, but they're all in a hotel. But like, I think guys are like allowed to go to dinner, and like, I don't think there's anything precluding them from doing that. Talking to Laird, it's not like they were in a facility and they have to get tested every time they leave and anything. Like he goes back to his apartment, you know, after practice is done and everything.
So not super isolated, at least in that situation.
So I think that actually just puts a ton of the onus on personal responsibility. Like if you know, okay, everyone's not in a bubble, and I'm the one, I could bring this into the facility if I'm the asshole that messes it up. I actually kind of think in a weird way that plays into NFL players' mentality, where like it's all about, you know, being a cog in the machine and being there for the team and everything. And like the best thing you can do for your team right now is not have COVID.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think I'm sure, you know, like many people around the country, a lot of these players don't. It's like you can not think this disease is super dangerous for young people, which I at this point I am kind of in that camp. But it doesn't matter, right? Like if you test positive and you spread it amongst your teammates, like your team's kind of screwed in that situation. Exactly. So it doesn't matter whether or not you kind of like quote unquote believe in it. Like a positive test is a positive test. You're kind of fucked if you get one.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the more we learn about COVID, it does seem that, well, it seems like it's really rough if you have any sort of respiratory, which some NFL players do have asthma and stuff, by the way, like that's a real thing. And it seems like if you have a pre-existing heart condition, it's also really bad because it just kind of messes with your blood flow and everything. But yeah, I mean, you know, if Leonard Fournette gets COVID, like maybe he has to sit on the couch for a week or whatever, but like even Fat Len is probably going to be okay. Like healthy people in their 30s are going to be fine, I think.
Yeah. I mean, in baseball, you know, we saw like the Marlins, I think they had like, it's like over half their team, I think like 16 or 17 positive tests.
Cardinals and,
like,
too.
And like all these players are back like within, you know, once they had to sit out like 7 to 10 days just for quarantine purposes. But I mean, all the players pretty much were ready to play baseball again after that time period, all the positive tests. So that was, I guess, a good sign in terms of, you know, even if something happens in the NFL, like I assume like baseball, like people were kind of panicking, oh, they're going to cancel the seasons. Like, man, they've come this far and decided to kind of take on the risks and all these labor negotiations. Like, I mean, what percentage chance do you think the NFL season will play to fruition? Basically, all the games will go off.
I mean, I could maybe see some games getting canceled, right? Like let's say
90, at least 95%.
I feel like it's like minus 500 that like a Super Bowl champion is crowned, basically.
Yeah, I think it's even higher than that, honestly. Yeah,
because so a couple things are happening. You know, first off, kids are going back to school, right? People are going back to work at a higher rate. Now, not everyone's doing this. Do I think that this is like a super great idea? Probably not. I think that, but maybe just with kind of the way the American mentality is, maybe it's just inevitable. Like,
I mean, there's no good solution to the school thing. You know, it's like, yeah, ideally,
sure. Yeah. The kids stuck at home. That sucks too. Right. Yeah. Like virtual learning sucks for especially young kids.
Yeah. No doubt about it. I didn't mean to turn it into a big COVID discussion again, like last time. So we can move on. So I'm interested. So I am going to start jumping in some best balls here. And I did really enjoy the draft format these last couple of years. Had some decent success there. Yeah. Which of the formats is the most similar to that, I would ask you? Because I haven't even looked yet.
Underdog is just the exact same. Half PPR, 18 roster spots, one quarterback, two running back, three wide receiver, one tight end, one flex.
Which is the most different from that?
The most different. Well, DraftKings is full PPR plus the bonus. Like, it's DraftKings scoring. So it's like you get the 300 yard. Yeah. Oh, and it goes to 20. DraftKings goes to 20 man roster size. The NFC, their best ball championship, I did one of those. It's $150, 100K up top, I believe. Maybe it's 50K up top, but it's 35 man rosters.
Ooh, so, like, is that the cut line?
No. The cut line is similar, but where I think you draft super deep, but then, you know, you have that waiver period.
Yeah.
The best ball championship is you just draft 35 dudes, right, including a defense and a kicker. Team kickers too, which, by the way, I love that for best ball. I love that element of the team kicker. I thought that was very interesting, just like having to draft like 19th string running backs and stuff. Like, I just thought that was a cool wrinkle. You might like that. I don't know.
I don't think I would be able to do that just because I'm not that far into my research, and I don't think I'll get to the, you know, the sixth string, and I don't do dynasty NFL or anything. So that probably wouldn't be the format for me. I think maybe the, you know, the little bit shallower rosters where I actually know all the players that I'll be drafting for the most part, I think would be the way to go. Which, who are your highest owned players through all these drafts? Do you know? Do you keep a spreadsheet of that stuff?
I keep a spreadsheet for my dynasty rosters, not for my redraft. I can look. So I already know, though, before looking, that my highest owned guys are going to be, yeah, my highest owned guys are Laviska Shenault, Andy Isabella, Miles Boykin, Christian Kirk, Jerick McKinnon, and Antonio Gibson on drafters. And on Underdog, my guess is it's probably going to be the same guys.
Isabella, is he going to have a role this year? He was my guy last year, and that didn't work out for the most
part.
Well,
so you can take him in the 18th round, so that's pretty solid, just being able to do that. And they're actually
fourth or fifth string there?
Probably fourth, but it's sort of like tied with Larry Fitzgerald, where you could kind of see it going either way. And the same is true on... The same is true. Yeah, Laviska Shenault, Andy Isabella, A.J. Dillon, Cortland Sutton, T.J. Hockenson, and Jerick McKinnon on Underdog. So, yeah.
Tell me about Shenault. I don't know much about him.
So he was a really early breakout guy in Colorado. He had like 1,400 scrimmage yards and 11 touchdowns as a true sophomore, so a 19-year-old in Colorado. And that he was still like really good market share wise as a junior at Colorado, but he played the whole season with a groin injury and then also had groin surgery after the combine. But he's, you know, 6'2", 220, 4'4", with a groin injury at the combine, like 90th percentile spark is only 20. Like, he's like, I would compare him to like Smith-Schuster as a prospect, basically, like declined in production the final year because he was hurt. But super athletic, ideal situation in terms of playing time, right? Like, he was a wildcat quarterback in college too. Like, he would do like the goal line stuff. So the hope this whole time has been, well, they don't give a shit about any of these running backs. Like, they're just going to let Shenault score touchdowns. And that's probably like 5% to happen. But if it happens, it's going to be the most glorious shit ever.
He goes pretty late draft, right?
He is going earlier. Like, for a while you could get him 16th round. Now, to like, if you want him, you got to take him in like the 13th round. Like, you got to take him instead of in Keel Harry, basically.
Yeah, word. What about the first round? I know I assume it's the case in NFFC where you have the Kentucky Derby style draft settings where you can put in your preference of where you want to draft. Is that a kind of an industry wide thing? Is that for the FFPC as well?
No, so you can't do that for the main event, and it really sucks because it's, let me tell you, it's a shitty feeling to spend $1,900 and then draft 10th. It's not a very good feeling.
I was going to ask, where is your preferred draft slot?
First. Yeah, you want to pick first. Yeah, Christian McCaffrey is just this giant edge. I think I think that picks 1 through 5 are massive, and then I personally feel that Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Miles Sanders are first-round picks. And, you know, can post 340 PPR point seasons. So I would take those guys all the way to 7. But other than that, I mean, taking wide receiver in the first round sucks. Like, let's just be real about it.
I mean, I was all about that last year of trying to get, you know, one of the early running backs just because there's such a drop off, especially, you know, with committees all over the league.
Yeah.
It's like the few, you know, there's not very many guys who kind of have that firm hold, aren't in a timeshare and are three down plus goal line. Like, I mean, really, really very few guys have that role. So to get one of them in the first round, I think is clearly the way to go. Although I think you tweeted yesterday or maybe 2 days ago that you think wide receiver is not deep, which seems like a kind of a crazy take to me.
So
I mean, at least in comparison to running back, right?
So wide receiver is not deep in the sense of guys you will actually, when you're going to go set your lineup on a Sunday morning. Look, man, you can tell me you like Jamison Crowder. You can be like, he's going to get all these targets. Like, you go start that dude on a Sunday, you're hating your life. Like, you don't – I promise you, guy out there listening to this who drafts Jamison Crowder in the ninth round all the time, like, that's not going to be a fun experience for you week in and week out.
He has zero breakout potential, right? I mean
he's, like, this is his sixth year in the NFL. He's never had a 1,000-yard season.
I mean, like some of those guys, like a Jamison Crowder type where it's like, yes, he may beat his ADP when you look at it at the end of the year, but, like, you're never excited to start him, right? There's, like, no scenario that can come around where you're like, oh, like, home run. I got Jamison Crowder. Like, this is the time.
And there are loads of dudes like that that are like Smiz said to me, like, oh, you know, there are 80 target wide receivers I can get in the 18th round. And maybe that's true. And maybe for best ball, you can make an argument that because, you know, you're drafting more wide receivers than you are, you don't have to pick. So you're just getting the spiked weeks whenever. You could argue that wide receiver has a lot of draftable guys in, you know, at wide receiver. Like I just said, my exposure of, you know, I draft Andy Isabella all the time. I think he can run into 60 like really good targets. Like Isabella targets are going to be really good ones, probably down the field.
In best ball, I mean, if Isabella has what, 2 or 3 20 fantasy point weeks, I mean, that's huge value.
I mean, if he has 2 80 yard touchdowns,
right,
like
exactly.
He did last year, he pays off the 18th round tag. Yep, yeah, easy.
Because you just want him to get into your starting lineup, you know, 2 or 3 times, so then he's obviously paid off his tag. So yeah, I like that strategy for sure. I assume you in best ball are kind of looking at receivers who can get those spike weeks, right? I think Andy Isabella is kind of like the quintessential maybe example of that, where he's going to have presumably some weeks where he maybe gets 0 fantasy points, but you know, you compare him to a Jamison Crowder who might not ever have a, you know, a 20 fantasy point game. So you want to target, cause you only, you know, especially in best ball where, you know, you don't have to choose who to put in. You just want those guys that are capable of the big days and the big plays.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that really is like, so for example, someone like Miles Boykin versus Steven Sims, like I would rather have Miles Boykin because I mean, he could, like, he plays for the Ravens. He could score 8 touchdowns on 55 targets or something absurd just because of that role he's going to play for Baltimore. Whereas, I mean, Washington might not throw 24 passing touchdowns, and Steven Sims is not going to have, like, that massive of a share of them.
Does Boykin have a bigger role this year? I mean, last year, I liked him coming into – like, his athletic profile is just, like, off the
crazy
charts, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully he can emerge in Baltimore. I like that call.
So it's not confirmed or anything. Like, we don't have Harbaugh saying, like, we're getting the – you know, he's out there every snap, but it's kind of like – okay, well, Hayden Hurst is on Atlanta now. They didn't sign or draft. They have Jarrell Adams as their third tight end now. Probably Boykin is, you know, 230 pounds. Like, he can run block. So kind of the hope is that they play him more in the slot and they do not target that Willie Snead, Jaleel Scott, Chris Moore group of guys as often. And also, Lamar Jackson only threw 404 passes last year. Like, I have him projected to throw 511 this year just because they won every game by 30 points. They're not going to do that again. Yeah. So that's a big part of it.
By the way, how badly does Jacob Rickrode want Fournette to sign with the Chiefs?
I mean, except in a way, he would be – like, Rickrode would be owning himself because it would prove that running backs – don't matter because Leonard Fournette would like look the same as Darrell Williams in that offense. And it would just be like a reverse cell phone.
Do you follow Rick Rohn, or does he just like jump in your mentions?
No, I would never. I would never, dude. And then every time I tweeted him, I have multiple people being like, dude, you just have to stop responding to this guy. And I'm like, I can't help it.
You've been telling yourself that for like 3 years now.
I literally can't. And he's wrong about everything. So that's the other thing, is it's like, it's the poison fruit, because he's wrong about everything. Yeah. He never gets anything right, but he also never admits it. So it's like, wow, the fruit from the tree, and then you eat it and you're like, oh, it tastes so good, but it poisons you, because he just will never be like, oh yeah, I was wrong.
Well, I love that this feud, I mean, I think it's probably been going on for like, it's gotta be like 6 or 7 years at this point.
This is year three. I even know the first thing we argued about. Okay.
It seems like it's longer, but it's like you guys have like no interaction with each other whatsoever for like months at a time, perhaps. And then,
correct.
And then there'll be like 20 tweets back and forth of you guys just like going at it. The conversation will end. You'll tell yourself, you got to stop arguing with this dude. And then a month later, it'll pop up about some. And it's like generally like kind of like the same arguments every time, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, well, the most frustrating thing is that he will be like, okay, I lost, right? He'll be like, okay, it's fine. Running backs don't matter, which he said after Damian Williams trampled all over the 49ers in the Super Bowl. And then the Chiefs draft Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and it's like he forgot he ever said that. And it's just so tilting. It's just like, oh, running backs don't matter per Andy Reid, who ran an undrafted free agent to win a Super Bowl. And it's the most infuriating thing ever.
Good stuff. I always enjoy it.
Yeah.
What about some of these first-round running backs? Aren't some of these guys emerging with question marks? Alvin Kamara?
They all have. Literally after CMC, Barkley, there are people who will pick nits in all of them.
Yeah, I mean, where do you stand on some of this? So Kamara, he's currently holding out, right? He's not at practice.
Not at practice.
Dalvin Cook, he's there, but, I mean, there was some concern about him too, right, with the contract holdout.
He told Schefter, I wouldn't want to draft myself in fantasy football if I don't get a contract.
Yeah. I remember saying that. I mean, Miles Sanders, is he still banged up? Joe Mixon is claiming hamstring migraines.
Migraines, yep. Kenny Drake in a walking boot.
Yeah.
The only guy who's got nothing but good news all offseason? Derrick Henry.
I love Henry.
They ship Deion Lewis out, right? So they get rid of his contract. They don't sign a third down back. You know, they could have signed Theo Riddick, like just all kinds of third down backs. They didn't. They draft Darrington Evans, who was a good runner at Appalachian State, but he has got nothing but like terrible reviews in training camp. Like, this guy fumbles, he doesn't know where to be, and now he's injured and has missed the last week of training camp, and we're 9 days away from the start of the season. So see the big dog is lined up for like another 350 touch season, basically.
I mean, the Titans are just going to run the same offense that they did at the second half of last year once Tannehill came in, right? Where it's just like a ton of Henry, a ton of play action. I mean, I think A.J. Brown, I really like him as the alpha there. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on the Titans in general? Because they were kind of a surprise down the stretch last year for sure.
I think kind of what you want to do is actually you kind of want to hope that they regress so that they run more plays. And like that's biggest for A.J. Brown, obviously.
Right.
You know that once Tannehill took over, they kicked one field goal?
Really?
Because they just scored. They just scored a touchdown on every drive. They scored or they punted, basically, because that's the Tannehill way. So like every time they got in the red zone, they just scored touchdowns instead of anything else, which, I mean, obviously having Derrick Henry, one of the best short yardage backs in the NFL, that's pretty useful. Having A.J. Brown, that's pretty useful. But I mean, I think there are a lot of ways, obviously, that things can go south in Tennessee, because we've seen a huge sample of Ryan Tannehill being way below average. I mean, I really like A.J. Brown, though, because if you can get A.J. Brown to like 140 targets, he's just going to crush. It's going to be unreal.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at some of his efficiency stats from last year, especially after Tannehill came in, like he was like, you know, one of the top few guys in like every single metric once they went to the Tannehill offense. So, yeah, I'm excited about him. I think, you know, some of these like second and third year wide receivers, like the Metcalfs, the A.J. Browns, the Gallups, you know, these guys, like when you say wide receivers not deep, like I don't know, in like the third through like eighth round, I see like just a ton of wide receivers that I want to draft.
Yeah. So for me, kind of that last group dries up with Christian Kirk and Michael Gallup and Will Fuller. And if you look
like,
at like
all those guys are like tremendous picks, right? I mean,
100%. I mean, total home runs. Yeah. The thing is for me after that, that's when I want to transition back to running backs. That's when I want to transition to Antonio Gibson, Zach Moss, Boston Scott, Matt Breida, Chase Edmonds, Tony Pollard, like that group of guys. And I think that draft, like the grinder mentality is like getting it backwards where they want to draft running backs in the third and fourth round when they should be taking wide receivers. And they want to be, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at, again, I'm not as far into the research process nearly as you are, but I want that first round running back.
Like, big time.
Maybe a second round running back as well. And then like five or six wide receivers in a row. And then just kind of all the shitty running backs at the end. Right. And just hope for one of those guys.
You just need one. I mean, starter. Cause yeah. In most leagues you are only required to start two.
Right. Exactly.
You should have one. You really like, if you get CMC, Barkley, Zeke, Clyde, Ritter, Miles Sanders, like you really just all year, you're just trying to get the one guy, and if you get the, you know, the Latavius Murray back-to-back 30-pointers, if you get the Boston Scott, you know, 15 points per game for the last 4 weeks of the season, you get Mike Boone week 16, like you're just chasing after those all year, basically.
I mean, especially in the best balls, like if you get a CMC or Barkley or Elliott, whatever, if they go down injured for multiple weeks, like – probably not going to win your league anyway, right? You're kind of just screwed. So you might as well almost like bank on them staying healthy. And if they do, right, if McCaffrey or Barkley is healthy, like they're going to be in your lineup pretty much every week anyway in an optimal scoring format even. So it would seem to me that you could almost just like not even – if as long as you get a couple, you know, a stud early back and maybe a second or third rounder, you just kind of like bank on them staying healthy. If they go down, you just kind of, you know, that league is just kind of, you just punt it, right? It's just kind of over. And then just, you just have a ton of wide receivers that can emerge with weekly spike weeks on, you know, in the three wide receiver spots and the flex spot. It seems like that would be, give you the best chance to kind of really hit the nuts on a team.
So I have not experimented with this a ton, but Leone and Anthony Amico have been doing these teams on Underdog where they draft like three running backs.
Yeah,
like,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah, yep.
Yeah, they draft, you know, McCaffrey, Jonathan Taylor, James Conner, and then that's
it. And
then
it. Just pray.
And,
yep.
And then, yeah, and then they draft, you know, 13 wide receivers or whatever.
Yeah.
I have not brought myself to do that yet, mostly because I get in the 12th and 13th round, and you'll notice that actually there's just this insane wide receiver dead zone there where it's like Golden Tate, Sammy Watkins, Mike Williams, Anthony Miller, and you're like, I hate all those guys. Like,
don't diss me. Sammy Watson's good name. Watkins' good name.
He should have made
the year,
me,
Davis. This is gonna be the year.
Pete, I was just counting my money after the three. He scored like 48 DraftKings points the first week. I had him on like every team.
I had him in cash.
I was just like, oh my god. Football is going to be so great this year. I can't lose. And he literally did nothing until the Super Bowl.
I think I tweeted after that game, like, go acquire Sammy Watkins at any cost.
Oh, I was having the same take. Like, I was like, my take was like, oh yeah, buy him now. Like, if someone is trying to bail on this performance, like, you got to go get him now.
What happened? He looked so good. And then like, he was relatively healthy. And then he just,
well, you know, the crazy thing,
Mahomes got hurt, of course, but even
it's not
that,
like he wasn't being targeted like that. You might think that like, maybe he like wasn't getting targeted as often. Nope. 90 targets in 12 games because he got injured right at the start of the Denver game, but he was second on the Kansas City Chiefs in targets, and his only touchdowns the whole regular season came in that very first game.
He looked so good that game. I mean, I don't really understand like what exactly happened to him after that first game where he could look that fantastic with Mahomes as his quarterback, still get like nearly 100% of snap shares, still get targeted, and just pretty much do absolutely nothing after week one. So that was a strange one. He's a strange dude, that Watkins. It's hard to.
I mean, he is. I mean, he's a very strange guy.
In like, a lot of different ways.
he believes that he has been abducted by aliens. Like, he has this, if you Google Sammy Watkins Bleacher Report, he has a whole story where he told some reporter, like, I was abducted by aliens, and deadass believes it. It's incredible.
Maybe he did. After week one, and they, like, sapped his powers or something?
It was, like, when he was a kid, I think. Oh, okay. It's like when he was in high school, he thinks that he was abducted by aliens.
All right, I gotcha.
Insane, though.
What about these rookie running backs? I confess to not knowing a ton about them. The Detroit guy, the Rams guy, Cam Akers. What's the Detroit guy's name? I forget.
Yeah, DeAndre Swift.
They look like they have a pretty reasonable path to big workloads. Is that your take?
And Swift is, because he's probably not going to be ready for week one, Swift is like the biggest faller on draft boards right now, and I'm taking him every time. He missed a week of practice with like a hamstring injury. Carry on. Maybe he'll play week one, but Carry on is going to start the year as a starter for sure.
Okay.
Which like, sucks, but
Carry on's like got a knee brace on or something, I think I heard.
Oh, dude, he's got this knee brace. You got to go look it up. The Lions account tweeted a picture of him on his birthday with his knee brace on. I mean, this knee brace, Pete, dude, it is as big as me. It is unreal how big this knee brace is.
I'll check that out after the show for sure.
It's like the old Gronk arm brace, but on his knee. So that's not great.
That doesn't seem ideal for a running back, got to be honest.
Yeah. So I like all of them. The one thing we know about rookie running, like, well, one thing we know about running back breakouts in general is the guys who tend to beat ADP are rookies or guys in backfields where the market is just saying, like, we don't know where, like, so for example, like Jordan Howard, Matt Breida, where they're like both going in the 9th round, or the Rams where Akers is going in the 5th, Henderson's going in the 12th. Like, just historically speaking, when you see, you know, two running backs both going inside the top 40 at their position, just a lot of breakouts come from that, those guys, historically speaking. So I like
Matt Breida, man. Like, what? Yeah. 9th round for him seems really good. Jordan Howard, come on. You got to be able to beat that out.
I mean, literally everyone that Jordan Howard has ever played with has beat him out. Like, literally. He just always ends up a backup by the end of the year.
Yeah, it would seem like that's going to go down again. What about, I'm trying to think of other questions I have. What about the Bucs, Tom Brady and the Bucs? What's going to happen with Godwin and Mike Evans? Because, you know, without really trying to project it out, it would seem to me that Tom Brady probably represents a downgrade in terms of the production of Godwin and Evans, while perhaps being an upgrade for the offense the efficiency of the offense as a whole. Is that a fair take, or what do you think there?
So my instant reaction take when it first happened was like, this is just a disaster for Mike Evans, right? Yeah, because right? Jameis just gave him so many, like Jameis and Evans were the perfect.
I mean, Jameis can like fit. Extend plays. He's got a monster arm, obviously completely willing to throw into massive coverage. Tom Brady has none of those.
My more measured take is...
Who talked you off this ledge? Someone talked you off this.
Leone. Leone,
okay, yeah, of course.
So the more measured take is they'll probably have way more sustained drives, right? Like, they're probably just going to have a lot more drives where they go for, like, 11 plays. They complete
more receptions.
More receptions. Yeah. Probably more usage for Evans as... Like, I don't think Mike Evans... I don't know if I've ever recalled seeing him run a bubble screen. Right, I don't think I've ever seen him do that in his career, and my guess is he probably gets a couple of those.
There's no reason he couldn't. I mean,
he's the man. Like, Mike right, Evans exactly. is just yes, a baller. Yeah. And also, Godwin has not been at practice for like the last week, and maybe I've missed something in the last 24 hours, but Bruce Arians and the coaching staff have just not given us any reason as to why he's not at practice. Don't know if he's injured. Don't know what the deal is there. Also, there's Peter King had this report that Gronk is going to be third on the team in tight end snaps, which basically means he's third downs and red zone only. So to me, I think that says they're going to run the ball a ton. Like they are still going to just run Ronald Jones a lot because, you know, they don't want to be exposing 43-year-old Tom Brady to all these hits. My general mindset is I'm more pessimistic than I am optimistic about 43-year-old Tom Brady, but I've just kind of been beaten into submission by the market, which is just showing no signs of folding. Like, you're not, you just can't get these guys later than they go. They just do not fall. And if you want to go through a year of fantasy football without Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, I mean, more power to you because those guys are just so good. So I've kind of been beaten into submission, basically.
Yeah, it seems like they could just get so many targets if that offense starts clicking and they're able to sustain drives, like you mentioned. So, yeah, and they're just so undisputed as, like, the two focal points of the offense, and that's just not going to change. You know, like, they're just – for me, like –
So they could each see 160 targets.
Right,
easy.
Right. And, like, if you just kind of, like, imagine, like, turning on the Bucs game in week one and it's just like, oh, first drive, like, they each got, like, three catches. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Mike Evans, he had one. He had one on the sideline. Godwin had a slant.
Took for
17 yards. Yeah. And because really kind of what I'm thinking in my head is, why can't Godwin just be like the most souped up version of Julian Edelman ever? Like, why can't Godwin be like Edelman, but like
huge? But like actually like
good,
massively physically talented football player, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And Evans can kind of play like hybrid Gronk, Philip Dorsett like style where he can see some of the deep targets. I imagine he will probably Mike Evans will lead the team in red zone targets by a lot. Like, I think that he'll kind of be their primary go-to guy. And I mean, Mike Evans has been in the NFL for 6 years. He's had 1,000 yards every season. He's going to have 1,000 yards again this season. Yeah, like, yeah, and he's just awesome.
For sure. What about my Vikings? Obviously, traded Stephon Diggs. Thielen, I'm a big Thielen fan, always have been, but like I was a little worried about his aging.
Everyone likes him more than me. I never get him.
But then, like, they don't really have much behind those guys. I think Irv Smith, there's like, I don't know, almost like six or seven very late round tight ends that have legit breakout potential. I'd put Irv Smith in that group. But who's going to even be the wide receiver too for the majority of the Vikings plays? Like, they have BC Johnson and then they drafted
Justin Jefferson, but they also signed Tajay Sharpe away from the Titans.
But he's not good. Like,
no, he's not any good. I mean, I think the actual answer is the Vikings are just going to run the air out of the ball. That's what they want to do. Any game the Vikings get off to like a 10-point lead,
you can
pretty much count Adam Thielen as like four catches, 40 yards, and that's it, because they are like Alexander Mattison is going to out-touch Adam Thielen in games that they win because they are just going to run the ball so much. And the defense is sick, and it got better. They just traded for Yannick Ngakoue. It's probably not how his last name is pronounced, but they just traded for him from Jacksonville.
Right.
Their corners aren't great, but their front seven and their safeties are all – fantastic, and that's the strength of their team.
They got like all new cornerbacks, right? I think, but
yeah, like a whole new rotation
that could conceivably be an upgrade, right? And even last year with like Xavier Rhodes just being horrible, the defense was still very good overall.
It'll probably be better this year.
Yeah. Any thoughts on how the lack of fans and then also lack of like preseason games, just like the unique situation that the NFL season is going to be played under. Do you have any takes on teams or players that could negatively or positively impact, especially?
Well, my primary take is dudes are just going to get hurt week one at like an alarming rate.
That's
going to
happen for sure. We've seen it. Yeah. In baseball, the injuries have been way, way
absurd.
Up across the board, especially with pitching. But I mean, that's generally true, and I think that'll be – I mean, I think we're just going to see a ton of like quads and hamstrings,
soft tissue.
They're just not ready to go. Yeah, I mean, that seems basically inevitable, right? Like, I would be
another reason to just draft loads of wide receivers and wait for running backs, because week one Well, week one, there's going to be, I guarantee you, at least one, you know, locked in RB1 is going to get hurt.
Oh,
and,
for sure.
And his backup is going
to
be.
Probably more than one, to be honest.
Probably more than one. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not, that's not to say that wide receivers are immune from getting hurt, but I mean, everyone who's played fantasy football for a long amount of time knows, like, guys who look like great wide receiver waiver wire bids are, like, literally gone in a week, and then you'll never hear from them again. It's just, it's kind of the nature of the game. Sure. In terms of home field advantage, my guess is it's going to become really obvious after a couple weeks, like, oh, this team is losing a ton of edge without fans there or whatever, but I don't know enough to say which team that is now.
It'll be interesting. Normally, you see like what the – it's basically like a three-point home field edge is kind
of – And lines have not adjusted at all.
Interesting.
For that, yeah.
So that, I guess the line, you know, the odds makers and are assuming there's more that goes into home field advantage than just like the crowd noise, which makes some sense. But you would think it would have some effect in reducing the amount of home field advantage, right?
Well, what that book Scorecasting found – was that, you know, it wasn't the crowd getting into it. It was that the crowd basically influenced refereeing decisions, and that home field, like home teams, just had like a big edge on refereeing decisions. It's going to be very interesting to see which way that goes.
I assume they're all piping in crowd noise. Is that the plan?
I guess, yeah. I mean, I don't know for sure, but it's going to be like everything else. I've never gotten an answer to this. Can the players hear the piped in crowd noise, or is that just for TV? Like for the soccer games? Like, I don't actually know. Like,
no,
I don't know.
They can hear it for baseball. Okay. Yeah. They can hear everything. It's piped in through the stadium loudspeaker. So it's not just for TV. The players can hear it. So it'll be interesting. Like, I assume that, I assume they're going to do that, a similar thing for football where they pipe it into the stadium loudspeakers. And I assume that will be like, you know, like regulated, right? There'll be like a, you can't go above like X level of decibels, obviously, because, you know, when you're on defense, you can try to like drown out the opposing offense. Like, I think there's some advantage to that. So, yeah, it'll be fascinating. I think my guess is we're going to like learn a lot more in week one than we ever have before.
Yeah.
And there'll be some like unexpected developments of like how this season's going to play out. So yeah, it'll be fascinating to watch for sure.
Yeah. My guess is that, like, you know, a couple of these backfield situations that we think we have solved, it's going to be we kind of think Adrian Peterson is going to start the year for Washington, but like Bryce Love might get 18 carries for Washington in their first game or something, or, you know, Boston Scott plays a ton for Philadelphia, or Marlon Mack gets, you know, 18 carries to Jonathan Taylor 6 in the game against the Jaguars or something. Like, weird stuff. Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason that, you know, fantasy football analysts pay so close attention to the preseason games, right? Because you can glean a lot from
who's playing.
You really
can, yeah.
And, like, I mean, you follow the beat writers and what they're saying, and, you know, I've even seen some guys, like, you know, tracking, like, target counts and stuff like that. Like, that's all good information to kind of mine for, but, I mean, it's not.
When the bullets fly, dude, it's going to be a lot different.
And I know, like, you know, preseason is still, like, you can't get as much from preseason as you can during a regular season game, but you can still get a lot more from a preseason game than you can from beat reporters, you know, basically reporting on practices, right? Like, that's pretty much the only information we have right now outside of, you know, obviously the physical profiles and what we've seen in the past, but there's just going to be so much that goes on in week one that people don't see coming. It'll be really interesting for DFS. I think it'll be, you know, if you're willing to, especially in the big tournaments, if you're willing to get kind of risky. I haven't even looked at, I assume salaries and stuff are out for week one. I think there'll be some really, really high scoring, super low owned players that emerge that people just didn't see coming at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna definitely have to make some conviction plays in week one. You know, we're gonna have to jam Biscuit in there.
You're just gambling, right? You're just saying, I don't know, like, we don't know. And this could happen, and if it does, then you hit the gold mine.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is certainly going to be one of the weak ones that, like, you know how after every week of football, people say, well, that was the weirdest week of football ever?
Yeah,
but, like,
yeah,
this might actually be the weirdest week of football ever. Like, we just are going to see some crazy stuff. Because we don't even, for for real, we don't even know, like, injury stuff. Like guys can be injured. We could not know. Like, for example, I was even trying to figure out if DeAndre Washington was even on the Chiefs from the beat writers for, like, a week. I got nothing. I radio silence. Could not figure out if DeAndre Washington was even with the team. And then finally a beat writer got back to me and was like, yeah, he's been working with the third team for the last week, and he was going in the 10th round of drafts.
Is it Darrell Williams? DeAndre
Washington was? Yeah, it's Darrell Williams is the backup, but no one knew, because we just don't know stuff like that, because we haven't seen these. Like, we would have known that in the preseason, right? We would have seen DeAndre Washington in there in the fourth quarter in the second week of the preseason against the Raiders, but we didn't see that this year, so we don't have anything to go off of.
Do the beat writers have less access to practices and information this year than they typically do with COVID protocols?
They have the same access to watching practice. They have different access to players. So, like, because it's set up where the players, like, come in this specific area and they get questions. And I think basically the players, if they don't want to talk, they just don't have to. They can just go to the locker room and go home. And that was what the Chiefs beat writer said, is DeAndre Washington doesn't like to talk to us, but Darwin Thompson will come in and talk to us for 30 minutes because he likes to talk. So I really do think it's just a matter of if players want to talk, they can. If they don't have to, they don't want to. And then beats have been in to see, like, all the scrimmages and everything, but some teams have a mandate that they can't report on player personnel packages or play calls. So, like, they can only be like, oh, Sam Darnold looked good, but they can't be like, Sam Darnold looked good in 11 personnel throwing to Le'Veon Bell. Like, they can't, like, some teams have, like, the Broncos, no Broncos reporters are allowed to say anything about player usage or personnel, which is, like, that's crazy. We literally don't know who the Broncos starting players are week one right now.
It's interesting. I'm almost surprised the NFL, like, league office allowed teams to implement that strategy, because it seems like, you know, a lot of fans are, like, after that information to try to, like, drum up excitement for the NFL season. Although that, maybe people are just so excited for the NFL season that doesn't matter anyway. Certainly possible after all this time.
Well, it's really interesting, and we can end with this. So, you know, people in fantasy football have been tweeting these Google trends of, like, this is the least interested people have ever been in fantasy football, you know, basically following Google Trends. And then, like, literally a week ago, people just realized football was starting and it's all trending back up. Yeah. But that it's just very funny that, like, it, and I think for baseball, it's different, where people were ready for the season and then it got postponed, but they were at least following the labor negotiations. But for football, I think people were just like, oh, it's just not going to happen. It's just not possible. But then they're like, oh shit, it's here.
That was, like, a prevailing take on Twitter as recently as, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. People were like, oh, there's no way they're going to be able to play football. The doomsayers have been proven wrong on this one. So, yeah, this was great. I appreciate all the information. I'll have to jump into some of these best ball drafts. And, get ready. What, we got, like, 9 days now until the opening game of the year? Is that right?
9 days until Chiefs Texans. You can still draft in the main event and in the primetime on the NFC until Saturday night before, which is actually always an interesting wrinkle. I did one after
the free look, right?
Yeah, you get the free look, and you can start players from that first game. Yep. So, like, if Darrell Williams scores 35 points in that opening night, like, he might go in the 6th round or something, just so you can lock in those points for week one.
Higher than that, probably. Yeah. 2 years ago, baseball did that, where they played, like, the 2 games in Japan and then they had a week off. And then, so if you were drafting in between those games and the start of the normal regular season, it was like, you know, like, some scrub ass, like, A's player hit 2 home runs and he's like,
yeah,
because people just want to start him for that, like, first period,
first week, yeah,
and get those, and then, you know, you can even fab them out or whatever. So, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, beautiful. Everyone, thank you very much for listening. Of course, you can follow Pete at Draft Cheat. You can check out his website, Moonshots DFS, where you can find all the picks, all the stats.
There you go.
Yeah, there we go. Everyone, we'll be back soon. Thanks for listening.